Welcome to Mumfessions, the podcast that will normalise all of the challenges we experience as mums. I'm Laura Guckian, life coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. This podcast is unlike any other motherhood podcast, because you will be my guests. Each week, I will invite you to share your mumfession. A mumfession is a challenge or experience that you are too afraid to share. The stuff that makes you feel like you are doing this whole motherhood thing wrong. I am going to help you recognize you are not the only one. You are not doing anything wrong. And most importantly, I will give you the tools you need to be a happier mum. And guess what? This season, I've invited some special guests to help me answer your mumfessions. Because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Coming up this week.
If you're finding it hard, it's because it is, not because there's anything wrong with you.
I think as women, the inner critic can be sometimes higher, but there's something about when we transition into motherhood and are going through matrescence that for so many women, that inner critic just tenfold. So therefore, it's our fault.
Be surrounded by other mothers, other parents, even your own family, and feel incredibly lonely. Loneliness is when you don't really feel seen in your experience.
It sounds like someone that has been trying to do it all. When we know Zoe, we cannot do it all. Make sure you listen until the end, where I'll be sharing my weekly tip and challenge to help make things easier for you. Before we begin, I'd like to ask you to do something for me. Please hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you are listening. I am so excited to welcome today's guest to the podcast. She is a mum, a qualified transformational coach, best-selling author, and host of, I can't believe I'm saying this, a podcast that has over 6 million downloads, Motherkind. Zoe Blasky, you are so welcome to Mumfessions.
Oh, thank you for having me. Lovely to be here.
I'm so thrilled to have you as a guest because when I first started doing what I was doing, everyone in Ireland told me I was a bit crazy. They were like, that's not a thing. You can't coach mothers. You can't do that for mothers. If you're a coach, you have to work in the corporate space. And I remember stumbling on your page randomly and I was like, oh my goodness, she's doing it. I'm not crazy. This is something that mothers need. And not only is she doing it, she's really, really successful at doing it. So I am delighted to have another coach that supports mums helping me today. And you're going to be helping me to answer an audience mumfession today and share your mumfession. But before we get into all of that, can you tell us a little bit about you in terms of how you got into this work of supporting mums?
Yeah, thank you. And I think it's so important what, you know, we're doing. And you're right. You know, when I started Motherkind, no one got it really. Very few people understood what I was trying to do. People kept saying, so it's parenting. I was like, no, it's not parenting. It's about what happens when a woman becomes a mother and all the challenges that that throws up. And luckily, I think we're in a different place today, partly, you know, thanks to you and me and many others that have now are now supporting mothers in their experience. But we're definitely pioneering, I think. So yeah, it's so important what you're doing as well. When I became a mother, I was completely unprepared. I hadn't heard the word matrescence. I didn't understand that, you know, that my perfect little life, like I think of it like a jigsaw puzzle, was going to get thrown up in the air and I was going to have to put the pieces together as a mother. I didn't know that was going to happen. So what I did is I decided that everything that I was feeling was wrong, that I couldn't cope, I wasn't cut out for this, that my relationship probably wasn't the right one because I felt so angry and resentful towards my partner. I had no idea that all of those thoughts and feelings were normal. And I vividly remember searching and looking for answers. And I found two things. I found a lot of the content, this was a decade ago, just under a decade ago, a lot of the content and support aimed at mums was around drinking culture.
Wow.
The best-selling book at the time in the UK was called Hurrah for Gin. And it was brilliantly funny, but it was about how overwhelming motherhood is and that the answer is drink. And I hadn't drunk for a long time and I still don't drink. So I thought, great, I'm screwed.
Like, well, that is my solution.
Yeah. What am I going to do? What on earth am I supposed to do? And then on the other side, all the parenting advice just seemed to make me feel even more guilty and even less cut out for the role. So I decided in my wisdom, as I see it now, to put down, you know, the advice about drinking and just trying to get through it. And I decided to put down the parenting advice. And I looked elsewhere. I started to really understand self-compassion. I started to understand this word matrescence. I started to understand generational cycles and how to treat myself differently in this new role. And it completely transformed my motherhood. And so I started telling people about it. Anyone that I would meet at a baby group or a toddler group. And I think to shut me up, a few friends said, well, maybe you should talk about this more widely. And that was never on my path. I'm someone quite introverted. I actually don't like being known. I really struggle with the public facing elements of my role sometimes. So I was very resistant to it. But as often these things go that are in your purpose or that are in your path, the idea wouldn't leave me. So I started Motherkind. I never, ever, ever dreamed that it would become what it has and is. And I feel incredibly passionate about it. And I do feel like in many ways, we're just getting started because I feel like what you and I discovered all those years ago, the world is waking up to now. And this word matrescence, I feel incredibly passionate about, is finally starting to eke its way into the mainstream and into mothers that need to understand it and hear it. So that is how I started, but it definitely wasn't on my path. It isn't what I thought I'd be doing, put it that way.
And I'm so glad you did. And I think that word matrescence, I don't know if you've the same experience, but when I share that with a woman for the first time, they almost stand still. It's such a validating moment of, oh my goodness, it's not in my head. I wasn't imagining it. This is actually and can be a really challenging transition into motherhood. And then that's usually followed by anger of, why did nobody tell me about this? So I'm really happy too that through the work that you and I and lots of other people are doing, that that's now becoming more of a known word because it is the best kept secret of motherhood. And why? Because it can be so hard. And I'm so delighted you set up Motherkind. And I'm not surprised that it has over 6 million downloads. And I'm no doubt it is going to continue to grow because I don't know if you feel like this in the work you do. I sometimes feel incredible privilege because I talk to mums every day and through my work and my qualifications, I know this stuff. And it's amazing to have these platforms to let other mums hear it, to go, actually, this is why it's hard. This is what you can do to fix it and hear from experts that they might not hear from. So I'm so delighted you set it up. Which leads me to, I suppose, the main question of the day. Zoe Blasky, will you please tell me your momfession?
I thought about this a lot and I think there's so many things that I have got so much relief from sharing, which I guess is the point of a confession, right? Is that you know, you share it and you feel relief. But I think the biggest one is definitely understanding that it took me a long time to feel confident and settled in my role as a mother. Like kind of only now, and I'm 8 years in and I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, do I feel like I am confident in that role? And I know because of the work that I do how normal that is. And when we put the matrescence lens on that, you know, matrescence is up to a decade and it restarts with every child. So in that way, I think to myself, you're only in the middle of your matrescence, so you've got still as long as you want to figure this out. And I think that is so helpful for me. But before I know what I knew now, that definitely felt something that I felt shame about. I remember thinking, do I just not love my little girls enough? And I thought, it can't be that. I adore them more than anything in the world. And I think when we don't have the words, when we don't have the support, when we don't have the tools, what women tend to do, and definitely what I did, is we self-silence and we self-shame and we decide that it's us and it's our fault and we're wrong. And I just really wish that back when I'd started, you know, something like my podcast or your podcast had existed, because I really would have saved myself years of feeling that I'm just not cut out for that feeling.
And it's so interesting, Zoe. It is that piece that I think as women, the inner critic can be sometimes higher, but there's something about when we transition into motherhood and are going through matrescence that for so many women, that inner critic just tenfold. As you say, we feel a certain way, we look outwards, we can't see anyone else feeling like us or talking about it. So therefore it's our fault. I'm not enjoying motherhood, therefore I'm doing something wrong. I don't feel confident in this, therefore I'm doing something wrong. It's me. And it's so incredibly sad. So I wonder if you could go back to Zoe, who was maybe 1 week into motherhood 8 years ago, what would you tell her? Knowing what you know now, what would you want her to hear?
I mean, I wish I could. That would be incredibly powerful. I think the first thing is that I would tell her that she has entered her matrescence. Mm. And just like her adolescence, you know, it's a time that is meant to be full of highs, without a doubt, you know, that joy, but also full of lows. It's like I always do this arm movement when I describe it. It's like loads of highs and loads of lows. And I think because the prevalent message that I certainly had absorbed is that I was going to have this baby and I was just going to feel joy and love all the time and there would be no other feelings, because that's what I had absorbed whenever I felt a feeling, which was, you know, exhaustion or resentment or that inner critic telling me that I wasn't doing well enough, I thought there was something wrong with me. So I would definitely tell her that all her feelings are valid, all her feelings are welcome, that her inner critic is so loud because you care so much. I really wish I'd known that. The inner critic gets louder the more that we care about something. You know, we're not very critical on ourselves about things we don't care about. We're very critical of ourselves about things we care about. So I'd wish I'd known that actually. That critic is a sign of how much you care, but you do need some tools to manage it.
Oh my goodness, sorry for interrupting, goosebumps there. It's such an obvious thing, but that's so true, Zoe. The more we care about something, the higher our inner critic will be.
Yeah, if you don't care about something, like I don't really care about taking the bins out and I'm not very critical of myself, but I rarely do it. Like I just don't care.
You didn't do that one right, Zoe.
Exactly, I literally don't care. Yeah. But when we care about something, the critic is very, very, very loud. And for most women that I speak to, they've never cared about anything more than their role as a mother, than their children. So it makes sense that the critic gets, you know, incredibly loud. But we do women a complete disservice. I mean, it's in my book. It's why the first chapter, after the matrescence chapter, the chapter I then immediately go into in my book is how to, I call it get on your own side, how to manage that critic and become your own friend, become your own coach through this thing of motherhood instead of your own critic. And I wish I'd have known that. I really wish I'd have known that. I wish I'd have known, you know, how to stop making it hard squared, which is when it's hard, right? It's really hard, modern motherhood. It's intense. Our nervous systems aren't actually designed to be for as many hours solo, one-on-one with a baby or a toddler or a preschooler, whoever it is, that's actually completely unnatural. So I wish I'd have known that, how to give myself that compassion and that context and that understanding to be able to get on my own side instead of it being hard. And then hard squared is when we're also hard on ourselves about it being hard.
It's so important, that inner critic. And I think through the work you and I do, we know the impact that has on mums at all stages. I'm like you, my eldest is 8. So we probably actually became mums around the same time. My youngest is 3. And the inner critic, through the work I do, it's one of the first things I work on with my clients as well. Because in terms of their energy and their reserves and their mental well-being, it has the biggest impact. It's like an app going. If that inner critic is constantly going, saying you're not a good enough mother, you're not doing it right, you're the only one feeling this, then our energy is zapped before we've even begun. And you layer that then with the demands of motherhood in terms of your sleep might be gone, you know, trying to balance that with career. So if we can master shushing that inner critic for mums, it has the biggest impact. So I'm not surprised that that is the second chapter of your book, because it has the greatest impact. Do you think, Zoe, if you had known that other women were feeling exactly like you when you became a mum, would that have made it easier, and why?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Because the moment that we can normalize an experience, we accept it.
Yeah.
And what we can accept about ourselves is the key to feeling positive about it, is the key to feeling like it's normalized, is the key to feeling like I'm having an experience and it's okay to be having the experience that I'm having. It enables us to go with the feelings and the emotions instead of having them and then also deciding that we're wrong for having them. Yeah. I love this idea that most of our stress comes from what we resist. Oh, and yeah. I think that was definitely true for me. I was so resisting what I now know is a completely normal experience. It was creating a lot of stress in my body, in my nervous system, in my thinking patterns, because I kept thinking I shouldn't be feeling this way.
Yeah.
And I think whenever we feel like that, it also takes a lot of energy that we don't have. So when we can say, how I'm feeling is normal, it's okay, knowing, of course, that for some women it's not normal and they do need to seek, mm-hmm. you know, professional therapeutic support. Absolutely. Your GP should be quite skilled at being able to work out where on that scale you are. But for me, you know, I didn't have postnatal psychosis or, mm-hmm. or anything more serious. I just was going through that matrescence, and it would have made the world of difference. I mean, that's where the passion comes from, to yeah. be up at 4 a.m. writing these books and yeah. recording these podcasts, because I just don't want any mother to feel that alone in yeah. her feelings again.
And it's so sad, isn't it, that I think of us when we became mothers, and it's exactly it. Like we go into matrescence. It's like we are also born the same mm. day our first baby is born. We mm-hmm. are, in essence, like babies to a certain mm-hmm. degree mm-hmm. in terms of learning and knowing what to do. And yet we feel like we're the only ones doing it. We feel so alone compared to any other stage in our life. And even though there are more conversations about it now through the work you and I do and other amazing people, it's still the number one thing I hear from my clients is, I feel so alone. I feel like I'm the only one. And I just don't know what needs to happen so that women feel like, actually, as you say, you don't have to experience a really challenging mental health challenge during your initial few months or years in motherhood. But the norm is, it probably is going to feel hard. And that's not to say you're a bad mother or you're not good at it or you're not grateful. But I wonder what needs to happen for that to become more of the norm experience then. Because I definitely, like, you may not know my story, but like, I really struggled with my mental health when I became a mom. I needed to go into a psychiatric hospital. Like, I was the extreme. Yet, even though that hospital was full of mothers and probably still is full of mothers at all stages, there still isn't this peace that's sort of saying, yes, mothers really will struggle with their mental health on a spectrum. Yes, some of us not so much, some of us very much so. But yet it's not part of the narrative. Does that make any sense what I'm saying? It's just not the narrative, yet so many of us felt it.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And I think about this a lot as well. I think a lot of women self-silence because motherhood is very complex. And I think in many ways we live in a world, particularly with social media, that tries to make things very binary. And so I think we have this idea that if you share that you are struggling with your mental health, if you share that you have feelings of anger, ambivalence, resentment, confusion, you know, even wondering if you made a mistake, that at the same time it means that you're not grateful that you were able to have a baby, because so many women, just so many caregivers, so many parents in the world want to have children and, you know, devastatingly can't. So I think we self-silence for that reason. I think we really struggle to do the, you know, the gray. It's not black and white, it's gray. No. You can feel a range of emotions and be incredibly grateful and be devastated that other people don't get to have the experience that you've just had. I think we struggle with that. And I think it makes sense why, because emotional complexity is tricky, right? Mm. You and I are trained coaches, and I still struggle to dive into the emotional complexity and the threads in the ball of wool, you know, that we have to pull to understand the emotional experience of motherhood. So I think that's one reason. I think the second reason is that, you know, loneliness, people think loneliness is about how many people are around you. So often the answer, if a mother feels lonely, is, oh, have you thought about going to a baby group? Have you thought about going to a coffee meetup?
Mm.
But that isn't what loneliness is at all. You can be surrounded by other mothers, other parents, even your own family, and feel incredibly lonely. Loneliness is when you don't really feel seen in your experience. So
yeah.
You can feel, if you feel like it's not safe, and I mean emotionally safe, for you to share how you feel really on the inside with someone, that will make you feel incredibly lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's really hard to do that, because if you share, you know, I'm feeling just completely overwhelmed right now, it takes someone with quite an emotional maturity to say to you, thank you so much for sharing that with me. I see you, you know, do you want me to just listen, or do you want to talk about some things you can do? That isn't the answer that most people get. The answer most people get is either toxic positivity. Yes, but think about all the things that are so great. You've got this baby and you've got a house and you can feed the baby and isn't it amazing? And your birth seemed all right. Mm. You will get that toxic positivity, or you get people who dive into solutions. Oh yes, me too. I downloaded this app. I read this book.
Have you tried this?
Have you tried this? You should. Oh yes. Well, it's because the baby's not sleeping and you need to sleep train. You will get bombarded with advice. And either of those sides of spectrum have one result, which is that you don't feel seen or validated or really heard.
Yeah.
And that only needs to happen a couple of times before you get the sort of idea, okay, I'm just not going to share how I feel on the inside. And I think that's a huge problem, not just in motherhood, but you know, in general, we don't really know how to support someone emotionally. We're not taught it at school, unless you've had the privilege of doing what you and I have done in coach training, which is, that's 90% of the job. You learn how to hold space and not offer solutions. I think that's why, you know, I think that's why the loneliness can feel so prevalent, and why often it's not shared, which is why, you know, spaces that you and I create, listening to content like this, is so important. Because if you haven't got anyone in your life that you can do that validation piece with, you can do it for yourself.
Yeah.
And obviously it's better to be able to co-regulate. Obviously it's better to have a coach or a friend who can really sit with you in the mud, as Brené Brown calls it, and be there with you. But if you don't have that, you can do that for yourself. You can say what you're feeling is valid. I hear you. I see you.
And it's really powerful, Zoe, because very often we don't know what we need. You know, another gem that you sometimes get back in response to that is, oh, tell me what you need. How can I help? And very often for mums, particularly when they're really in the depths of that postpartum stage, are like, I don't know. Because I don't know who I am anymore. And that is a massive part of matrescence as well, that shift in identity. And I think really I'm just having a light bulb moment there of, I really do think that is one of the biggest challenges for mums today is loneliness. Mm-hmm. And it's not physical loneliness. It's sitting within a mother and baby group and feeling completely alone within that group. And then turning that inwards. Well, there must be something wrong with me because I don't feel how they feel. And then they go home and they don't get a night of sleep. And it just goes on and on. And I really, really believe that is, honestly, the biggest challenge for some mums today is loneliness and really calling it out in that. And it's sad. It's sad. And I think that's really good advice, Zoe, in if you don't have access to a coach like Zoe and I, listen to these podcasts, find a good page on Instagram, and just tell yourself that what I'm feeling is real and valid. If you put your hand into boiling water, you would not question it. You'd say, this is hot. I feel this. Whatever you're feeling as a mum is really valid. And one final question before we move on to the audience mum fashion. If you wanted a mother to know one thing, based on all of your work over the last few years, all of the amazing people you've interviewed on Motherkind, and you just wanted them to know one thing, what would it be, Zoe?
I think it would be that if you're finding it hard, it's because it is, not because there's anything wrong with you.
I love it. It's so simple, but it's true. It's because it's real and it's valid. It's not your fault. It's not because you're not good enough or doing it wrong. It's because it is what it is. It's so simple. So simple, Zoe. We were never supposed to do this whole motherhood thing alone. The village is gone and it's not coming back anytime soon. That is why I've created an online village just for you. Imagine this. You have 24/7 access to like-minded mums in a safe online space away from social media. And I'm there too. You get to access 2 monthly online meetups with me and other guest experts, all designed to help you navigate different chapters of motherhood. And you have access to the Mind Mummy Coaching Academy, your online vault of bite-sized classes and advice, all designed to help you be a happier and calmer mom. You don't have to do this alone anymore. Click the link in the podcast description and say yes to a happier and calmer way. Let me help you. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. It's not selfish to mind mommy. It's essential. Shall we answer an audience confession?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hi, Laura. Yeah, just about the resentment. I'm a mama tree. Stayed home, took a career break from my job. We're going back after 8 years. Shortly, part-time. The resentment built up. My husband was just working so much. He's a bit of a workaholic. I was left at home. Two tricky kids out of three, one with really bad anxiety and one that has a feeding disorder. Breastfed for nearly 3 years, nearly lost my mind, but didn't take to weaning, so felt I had no choice. Only breastfed the other two children up to 6 months and thought that was good enough. Found the breastfeeding really difficult, but with her I just felt I had no choice but to keep feeding, as she wasn't taken to any food or anything, so that nearly broke me. Lots of sleepless nights, husband working 12-hour shifts, sometimes 8 days in a row. Also, my intrusive thoughts sometimes go to me getting sick or my husband getting sick and my kids being left without a mom or a dad. I lost my dad when I was 13, just haven't thought about it in so many years, but just having kids, your mind does go there, and often just think, God, how would you survive, on your own, how would my kids, pan out with just one parent, although my mom did an amazing job, but she's just an amazing woman, but yeah, my thoughts also wander off to that place too.
Wow, there's a lot in that one, Zoe. My first thought is, if she was one of my lovely clients and sitting in front of me, I think I would be challenging her to, just for a moment, put those feelings of resentment aside, put those intrusive thoughts aside, and just really ask her, what do you need? Because it sounds to me like she is literally the foundation and the glue that is holding everything together. And it's this sense of, I'm doing so much, what if I wasn't here anymore? And then why does my partner get to do all of these things? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I just thought is I have a lot of compassion. I feel so much compassion. And I heard a voice and I probably heard body language that I couldn't see that was very depleted. I think this person is very depleted. I think they're depleted emotionally, physically, spiritually, on every level. So I would probably start there. I also heard her say that she'd been breastfeeding for 3 years. So I would probably start. We can't do too much on the emotional work with a body that is chronically undernourished and depleted. It just doesn't work. So I would probably look there first. I would look at postnatal depletion. It sounds she didn't say it, but just a few things. You know, she said exhaustion. She said breastfeeding for 3 years. We know what that does nutritionally. Yeah. By how intense it sounds, I suspect she probably hasn't been feeding herself. She's probably been doing what we all do when it gets intense, toast for lunch, toast for dinner, toast for breakfast.
Yeah. Toast everywhere, yeah.
Exactly. So I would encourage her to look at some supplementation straight away.
Yeah.
That's probably where I would start, because I think when your body is able to function, then you can start to look at some of the more emotional and practical things. But that's probably the first thing that I would start with.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you brought up postnatal depletion, because again, this is one of these things that isn't spoken about. And whenever I say it, the response is normally, did you mean to say postnatal depression, Laura? And I say, no, postnatal depletion,
yeah,
which is actually a thing. You know, I first heard of it through Dr. Oscar Sherlock. I think he's from Australia. And it really is a thing that, like matrescence, I call it the second best kept secret of motherhood, because so many women are sort of that 2 or 3 years into motherhood and thinking, wow, why am I still so exhausted? Why am I still so depleted? You know, I'm not in that postnatal stage anymore. But actually, there's so much evidence now and research that would suggest the postnatal period is way beyond 6 weeks, 6 months, that it can go on actually for years.
Yeah.
So even in saying that, there's the compassion for a woman to go, I'm actually still in the postnatal stage. I really need to mind myself. I need to really protect myself, because like we were saying earlier, this is real and valid what I'm feeling. And I definitely felt that too. There's definitely physical depletion. And it sounds like someone that has been trying to do it all, when we know, Zoe, we cannot do it all. And I know that's a really hard thing to hear for many people listening might be, well, what else do I do? And I wonder for this mum, are there small things she can do that will help maybe preserve her reserves? Because I agree with you, when we're physically depleted, it can be hard to fill those reserves back up. But even if we switched her into preserving the reserves as opposed to them constantly leaking out, then I think she might be in a better position to navigate those feelings of resentment and navigate those intrusive thoughts, which can be really, really scary.
Yeah, I agree. I think definitely I would look at that, the postnatal depletion first. And Dr. Oscar Serelak, there's an episode with him on Motherkind where he talks you through what some of those main symptoms are. And actually the supplementation is quite simple in terms of how you can get yourself back on track. So that's the first thing I would look at. I would definitely look at the relationship with herself, because she's in a really hard situation. Let's make no bones about it. You know, she has three children, two of them have additional needs, and she is not being supported at home, other than financially, I'm guessing, because her partner is out of work, which is a huge thing to have that financial support, of course. But she is holding all of that together. So that's the first thing I would look at, is some compassion and understanding for herself, because what that does is that then unlocks a little bit of self-worth to start to think about those what do I need questions. Because when we are feeling low in self-worth, that I just have to keep doing all this, and a lot of our energy is going towards that resentment, it's really hard. You can give people all the strategies all day long, they won't be able to put them in place because they won't feel that sense of worth. So I would be working quite quickly on helping her reframe how important it is to put herself in the center of the equation in really, really small ways. So I teach a tool, two tools that I think would be really helpful. One is energy management. So self-care, I hate the phrase. I don't think it works. I think the idea that we can fix some of these huge problems in motherhood with kind of bubble baths and nails and hair, and it's just
100% agree. And I love you for saying that, Zoe, because I say it as well. There's no bubble bath that's going to help a mother in this situation. It's so much deeper.
That's right. So a tool that can help, obviously it doesn't help structurally, as in change, you know, the setup that she's got and those challenges, but it can help you operate within a really challenging situation in a better way, is to understand your energy. Because I heard someone who sounds very chronically depleted to me. So I would be encouraging her to think about, what is it, those tiny, tiny 1% that actually give her energy, that make help her feel good? It could be drinking a glass of water before caffeinating. It could be, you know, not slumping on the sofa during every nap time just because you're completely, you know, absolutely depleted and touched out, and maybe going for a walk around the house before you do that. I'd be looking at all sorts of, you know, she will know, and hopefully she's listening, and I would encourage her to think about, what are some of those tiny things that you can do that just add in a little bit to your reserves day after day, because those compound. Conversely, on the other side, what are some of those drains? So what are some of the things that are really draining you? What are those thoughts? What are those actions? What are those things that you're doing that are really draining you? That in a 1% way, it's really important to keep these super small, you could do less of. The other tool that I would encourage this person to put into practice is understanding the stress response cycle. So burnout, we think burnout is when we kind of give too much for too long. It's actually when we don't release the stress. So stress in its biological form is meant to occur in a cycle. We have the stress and we want to release it. And we know this from, you know, amazing work of Peter Levine and other people who teach us about how animals handle stress. So what we tend to do is, I think about this as, we're the sponge and the water is everything that we need to do day in, day out, all the stresses of motherhood and parenting and life and relationships and mental load, and all of it is the water. So imagine we're the sponge and we absorb that every single day. We're absorbing that stress, that water, thousands of micro stresses that this person will be going through every day. And if we don't wring that sponge out at the end of the day, that is when burnout happens, because it just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding until you cannot take it anymore. So we have to wring the sponge out at the end of every day. Now, this doesn't change things on a macro level. It helps you to operate within the system that you're in. We can talk about changing some of those bigger things shortly. So the way to wring out the sponge at the end of every day is actually super simple. It's called completing the stress cycle. It's all in my book, like all these ideas of what to do. But it's as simple as 2 minutes shaking your body, 2 minutes deep breathing, a 2 minute hug with yourself or someone else releases oxytocin, which counters cortisol. So that can really help. I'm hearing someone who is in what I would call, you know, the real sort of fire stage. You know, they are really in it. So what we need to give this person is like super simple strategies that she can do right now. I'm not hearing someone who is going to be able to put in big changes into her life. So we have to kind of meet someone where they're at. And once we've put some of those fires out, using some of these tools, like day after day, building up, focusing on the nutrition, focusing on those givers and those drains, focusing on completing the stress cycle, then I think that person might be ready to move on to think about fireproofing. Okay,
yes.
So what do I need to do? I clearly need to work on my relationship. I clearly need to work on the communication between us. We probably need to look at the fair play method. We probably need to look at the division of labor, parenting, childcare, all of it in our home. Do I need to get some specialist outside support for my two children who do have additional needs? What does that look like? And how am I going to navigate that system? But I wouldn't think about any of that yet. I think this person just needs to go back to basics. What do you think?
I think that makes so much sense. And I actually think that is the challenge with mums seeking support today, Zoe. It's that piece that you've just outlined there. The support they're offered is not meeting them where they're at.
No.
The advice given is not meeting them where they're at. So it just leads to that inner critic heightened again, because it's like, oh my goodness, I can't even think of that yet. And I think why I love how you're talking about it is it's actually hope that however you're feeling as a mum, the work Zoe and I do, it's not about, oh, you need to do this massive thing and you need to do it right now. It's more about, it's always small, realistic, sustainable steps, because we're not trying to get you to step 10. We need to start at step one. Mm-hmm. And if that for you means what you've sort of suggested there, Zoe, looking at what's draining you and looking at what might fill you up even a tiny bit, that's where you start. And that piece about burnout is so key. It's the release. And if we even link that back to her intrusive thoughts, I always kind of look at intrusive thoughts like that's the thought. Okay, that's the thought you're having. It is a real thought, but what's the feeling behind it? And as I'm listening to her there, what I'm sensing is I feel like I am, as you described, the sponge. I am the sponge that's absorbing everything. I am the sponge that's holding it all together. What if I wasn't here anymore? And I think that in itself, to even think about it, is enough permission to go, I deserve to fill up my reserves. I deserve to take care of myself. I deserve to take that tiny step that Zoe has outlined by virtue of the fact that you are the sponge holding it all together and you can't continue to hold it. That's the way I sum up what you've said. And it's really, really helpful in breaking it down.
Yeah, thank you. And I think with the intrusive thoughts that she was sharing about, a couple of things come to mind. One is that when we are depleted or stressed, we are way more susceptible to intrusive thoughts like that. So that's the first thing. In many ways, it's unsurprising. And I think that's why intrusive thoughts, you know, 99% of mothers will experience them. They will all say different things to us. Often intrusive thoughts come because it is our mind trying to make sense of the overwhelming responsibility. That is why new mothers often get intrusive thoughts like, what happens if I drop the baby down the stairs? What happens if I, you know, or mothers get quite violent ones often. There's an incredible expert called Dr. Caroline Boyd who did a whole thesis on where these come from. And again, she's in the book and she's on the Motherkind podcast. And she really helped me to understand that that is your brain trying to make sense of this huge responsibility. Your brain flips into overprotective mode. Okay, and it's scanning in a way that it would never have scanned before for every possible threat. And that is what I would make up. It's so hard without having to dive deeper, which of course you would do if you were sat with someone. But I would make up, based on just that short voice note, that that is what is happening. Yeah. Because that experience happened to her, her brain has gone into ultra protective threat mode. And the biggest threat that happened to her was that she lost a parent.
Yeah.
So her brain is flipping into that. So yeah. I think it's super important to understand that, that actually it makes sense. And I think the moment that someone helps me, if I'm sat with a coach or a therapist or someone who's helping me, the moment someone helps me realize that actually my responses make sense, I find that incredibly validating and normalizing and helps me have so much compassion. So I would say to this person, it makes a lot of sense that that is where that thought is going.
Yeah.
And depending on how resourced she felt to dive into it, it would probably be quite helpful to dive into what is underneath, as you were saying, Laura, what is underneath that fear?
Mm.
You know, what is going on? What is that thought trying to tell you? And often when we do that, what we realize is that actually that thought is just trying to protect us.
Yeah.
It's got missized. But what it's actually trying to do is help us avoid a huge pain that she experienced in her life. So instead of saying to that thought, you know, go away, you could say, you know, thank you. I can see that this thought is coming because I am trying to protect my children. I can see that comes from the huge amount of love for them. But I'm going to choose not to let this thought override, you know, my actions and to become bigger than it needs to. And often when you do that, that simple act of seeing that thought, that often can be the very thing that right sizes it again. So it would be interesting to do that. But it's very tricky without the person in front of you. Sometimes, yes. Sometimes if you're too depleted, you're not in a place to even be able to really hear that those ideas.
Yeah.
So normalizing intrusive thoughts, I think, is very, very important. Yeah.
And I actually think that's quite a beautiful reframe that you had there, Zoe, about the intrusive thought, that because I think a natural reaction with a lot of the clients I support is the avoidance. I feel this thought, I don't like it, we're just going to push it away. But actually, if we talk to ourselves a little bit more, and I'm a great fan of talking to myself, I'll have little conversations with myself all the day. And it's exactly as you say, what could this be trying to tell me?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is coming from a place of love and support and self-compassion for myself. Maybe it's a signal that I'm doing too much, that I'm holding too much, that I'm carrying too much. And if we flip that from, oh, that's scary, to, what could this be about? That's so much. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but it's easier to do than to try and push it away and run from it and think, oh my goodness, why am I thinking that? That's so scary.
Yeah, because it's true, because often, not this intrusive thought per se, but often intrusive thoughts will be violent or harmful towards your child, either accidental or sometimes purposeful. And that is petrifying.
Yeah.
So it's a really natural reaction to want to just push it away. And in fact, I had someone on my podcast who had carried her baby down the stairs on her bum for like 2 years because she was so afraid. The problem when we do that is that we give a lot of power to that intrusive thought and we make it seem more real. In fact, it's quite counterintuitive, is to kind of see the thought, thank it, and then try not to let your thoughts determine your action, because every time you're doing that, you're giving that thought more and more credibility, more and more power over you. So it's really hard to do because they can feel really real and scary. And that would definitely be a time to find someone, professional or otherwise, that you can talk to about it.
Oh, Zoe, I found this so helpful. I think what we're summing up for this lovely mum is really start with the baby steps here. Mm-hmm. What do you think you need in a day to, as you say, Zoe, that 1%? We're not talking about 100%. 1% to make it feel a little bit easier for you to unload some of what you're carrying. And then as you feel a little bit stronger and that your reserves start to fill up a little bit more, that's when you start looking at the other thing, like the relationship with your partner, maybe seeking additional support for those intrusive thoughts. But actually, by virtue of doing the first few steps, sometimes that indirectly helps the other things. It sort of has a ripple effect.
That's right.
So Zoe Blasky, thank you so much for joining us today. Everyone, I am going to link so many things in the description that Zoe has mentioned. Her book, that episode with Dr. Oscar Sarah, like, it's amazing. I think I've listened to that one. Give it a listen, ladies. Really, really beneficial. And just, it was such a pleasure to have you on today, Zoe. And can I just say thank you so much for starting Motherkind all those years ago and for all the conversations you've had and for opening the door for more women like me to add to this conversation and to support mothers. Like, thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for all the work that you do as well.
Take care, Zoe. I really enjoyed my conversation with the amazing Zoe Blasky today. And the reason I wanted to bring Zoe on was, you know, like me, she is a life coach for mothers. She is an exceptional life coach for mothers. She has had amazing success. I mean, her podcast Motherkind is over 6 million downloads. It's incredible. But I wanted to really create a space where Zoe and I suppose we're talking about the things that we know through our work and that we help our clients do, but sharing that privilege with some of you that may have not have had access to my support as a client or Zoe's support as a client. And I think the big takeout for me was, and I always talk about them, the whys. You know, it's part of module one in my academy that Village members can access. If you want to access it, join it below. You get 1 month free. But it really was covering, you know, matrescence, postnatal depletion, all of the reasons why as mums it can feel really hard, yet nobody is really talking about it. And so our inner critic is really heightened and it must be our fault. I'm not doing it wrong. And I really, really encourage you to maybe even go back and listen to this episode, which I know so many of you do. You re-listen to these episodes, which is amazing because there's so much in them and you take something from it each time you listen. But particularly this one, I mean, Zoe and I probably spoke about it very quickly because we talk about it every day. Matrescence, you know, recapping, that can last up to 10 years. It's like adolescence, but for mums. So you are incredibly emotional. You are incredibly vulnerable from an emotional perspective, from a psychological perspective. You are. It is hard. It's supposed to be hard. And recognizing that we don't just give birth or have our child and suddenly become a mother, that it is a process of becoming a mother. And I guess my challenge this week is less about a challenge and asking for your attention for the next few minutes and listen to what I'm about to say, because this is not something Zoe and I covered, but it's something that when I shared with my Village members recently, they were kind of speechless because it reframed their feelings as a mother in motherhood and while they do the mothering. So I just want you to sit back and listen to this. And it basically is the difference between mother, mothering and motherhood, right? We talk about these three things all the time, but what do they actually mean? And I used to talk about this a lot, and the lovely and fantastic Dr. Sophie Brock in Australia has been helping me study this more. And I've been studying with Sophie for the last number of months, and we're really digging deep into the academic and the research and the data behind this. And I want to share a snippet of those learnings with you. So let's look at the difference, and then I'll talk about why it matters. What is mother? Mother is just your identity. When you get married, you become a wife. You are a sister, you are a child, you are a friend. It is just a name that is given to you when you have a child. That's all it is, okay? Mothering is the act of the caregiving. So mothering is the stuff we do. That's the mental load we carry. That's the getting up in the middle of the night. That's the making the lunches, the dinners. That's the cuddling them. That's all of that stuff. That is the caregiving part. Motherhood, if you imagine it, is where we sit. It's the structure within where we become a mother and do the mothering. And this is where it becomes really interesting. And I could talk about this for an hour. I'm actually, I think, going to do a separate module in the Academy for Village members. Again, if you want to access that, join the Village for free below. Because this is why it really will make you feel seen and heard today, because we all sit in a different space within motherhood. So I want you to think of motherhood like the ocean. Okay, some of us might enter motherhood in a gorgeous yacht with a warm cup of coffee, a lovely blanket, And it feels really easy. And we're the mothers that are saying, wow, this is amazing. I love this time of my life. Motherhood is amazing. And it is for that woman. And through no fault of her own, she entered motherhood within the structure, the ocean, because of her privilege. Okay? And so many of us are there. I know I'm talking about a yacht now, but I want you to imagine your life now. So the yacht could mean, in today's society, access to healthcare, access to childcare, access to a career, access to having healthy relationships, all of those things. That's what the yacht means, okay? And some of us have more access to that because of our privilege and through no fault of our own. So that's mother one. That's where she enters motherhood. There's another mother that enters motherhood and she's in the ocean, but she's got a wetsuit and a life jacket. So she's kind of thinking, yeah, this is a little bit hard, but you know what? It's not too bad. It's okay. I'm doing it, okay? Then there's another mother who enters motherhood and she's in the cold ocean and she doesn't have a life jacket and she doesn't have a wetsuit and she's treading water and she's finding it really hard. And she's looking at the mother on the yacht and that mother's going, wow, this is the best time of my life. But that mother in the ocean doesn't know that that mother has the yacht and all of the privilege and support she has. So she's thinking, why am I finding this so hard? What's wrong with me? Why am I not enjoying every moment? I might be doing it wrong. The mother on the yacht is looking at the mother in the ocean going, why is she complaining? She's so ungrateful. She doesn't deserve to have children. Why is she so negative? And that's the woman I've been called sometimes. But that woman on the yacht doesn't realize that the woman in the ocean is desperately treading water in the freezing cold ocean without the life jacket. And she is working 10 times harder through no fault of her own because she doesn't have access to the support that the woman on the yacht has. So I want you to reflect on where do you think you sit within the motherhood structure? Because where you sit is not your fault. Whether you have privilege or lack of privilege, it's not your fault. But I want you to recognize that if you have a privilege, maybe that has contributed to your experience of finding motherhood easier. But equally, if you have privilege, you can also have lack of privilege. And what I mean by that is I am a white, Irish, educated woman who is within my means financially secure. Am I loaded? No. So on paper, I look like the woman on the yacht, but I'm also autistic. I also had a severe mental breakdown when I became a mother. I haven't had the easiest life. So I also have lack of privilege. I'm also raising autistic children, neurodivergent children. So I have privilege and I have lack of privilege. They can coexist. So you might look at me and go, she's the woman on the yacht. And some days I am. Some days I have access to everything and life is good. But there's other days I'm the woman in the freezing cold water without the life jacket and the wetsuit treading water. And I'm saying this is hard. So I just want you to reflect this week. And I know there was a lot I covered there. But if you can take one thing away, the difference between mother, mothering and motherhood. And if you are finding a day hard, I want you to ask yourself, am I finding the mothering hard? Or am I just really, really angry and frustrated about where I sit in motherhood and the lack of support? Because what that will do is give you permission to be more honest about how you feel. Sometimes the mothering is hard because of where you sit in motherhood and it has nothing to do with you. And it gives you permission to say what's hard. It also gives you permission to tune into possible actions you could take. So ask yourself this week, what are you finding hard? Your identity as a mother? Probably not. The mothering, the caregiving, the mental load, or the frustration of where you sit in motherhood and the lack of support that you have. And let me know. Let me know. Drop me a DM on Instagram, Mind Mommy Coaching. Drop me an email. And please, please go back and listen to this again because there's so much of it that I could talk about. But it's just healing to know it's not your fault. It's nothing to do with you. Maybe you are just the woman that entered motherhood in the freezing cold water without the life jacket, and you are working twice as hard. This was an Insanity Studios production. The production manager was Charlotte Mason. The podcast producer was Saffron Mirza, and the production assistant was Abby Sandler.